Then an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Get up and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. That is a wilderness road." So he got up and went. Now there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of the Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians, in charge of her entire treasury. He had come to Jerusalem to worship and was returning home. Seated in his chariot, he was reading the prophet Isaiah. Then the Spirit said to Philip, "Go over to this chariot and join it." So Philip ran up to it and heard him reading the prophet Isaiah. He asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" That story from the book of Acts is one of the most extraordinary tales of being in the right place at the right time that you will ever hear. It tells of an extraordinary encounter between Philip and a eunuch from Ethiopia on a deserted road in the middle of nowhere. Philip is there, apparently, because he has received a divine message directing him to this place. That in itself is quite extraordinary. But I'm actually a little bit more curious today about how the other person in the encounter came to be there. The description of this Ethiopian makes me ask a few questions. What was he doing on that road? What was an African and a eunuch doing worshiping in the temple, the Jewish temple, in Jerusalem? And what kind of experience would a man like that have had in that temple at that time? Perhaps even more interesting, in an age long before the printing press made books affordable to anybody, how did he get his hands on a scroll of the prophet Isaiah? There must be quite a backstory before he ever met Philip on that road. And I love nothing more than telling a backstory because, well, this is Retelling the Bible. Episode 8.10, Bacchus. His name was Bacchus. At least, that is the name he is given in Ethiopian Christian tradition, and it seems a good one, so let's use it. He had lived in Ethiopia all his life, but had lived there as an outsider, a Jew. Jews had had thriving settlements in Africa for over 7 centuries at that time. And though they had intermarried with the natives, they had maintained their traditions and worship. There was a huge Jewish settlement at Elephantine on the Upper Nile, where Jewish mercenaries served the Egyptian pharaoh by guarding his southern frontier. They even had built their own temple there and carried out their own sacrifices. Bacchus's ancestors had come from Elephantine. They had traveled south to Ethiopia to seek opportunities and a better life for their children. And his parents had placed many of their hopes upon their eldest son. The operation he had had to undergo had been a necessary part of that. Ethiopia was a prosperous nation that was ruled by a powerful queen called the Candace. She was wise and beloved of her people. Her faithful servants were rewarded with wealth beyond all dreams. But in order to gain such a privileged position, the Candace needed to know that her servants would be devoted to her alone. It was understood that if a man could have a child, he would be honor-bound to provide for his family first. It would be shameful for him to do otherwise. So there was a requirement to serve the queen, to cut off even the possibility of having children. And so, it had been done. It was a great risk for his parents to take, of course, for there was no guarantee that he would even get a position at court. But that gamble paid off. Bacchus was intelligent and talented. He rose quickly in the ranks of the civil service until he had control of the Candace's vast treasury. It was everything that his parents had ever dreamt of. But what about Bacchus? Was he content with the trade-off? He was daily aware of the enormous price he had been forced to pay for his success. He wondered what all his wealth meant, and if it would all come to nothing when he was dead. He began to seek out a deeper meaning in his life and some sense of something that would last beyond this present life. Having been raised among the Ethiopians, he had been constantly surrounded by Ethiopian gods and the worship of them. He had mostly gone along with the local customs to get along. But as time went by, he found that the teachings about Wak, the Adbar, and Ayana were not satisfying his deep craving for meaning. He decided to explore the Jewish heritage that he had mostly forgotten. He went to his queen, fell to his knees, and begged for permission to connect with his roots and find the meaning he was craving. He wanted to go all the way to Jerusalem and the great temple of the god Yahweh. The Candace understood that this would be a very long journey, and that she would be without one of her most trusted eunuchs for nearly a year. But she was a wise woman. She had seen him struggle with his identity and purpose. She knew that if he was granted this, it might make him a better servant. She granted him permission to go. Five months. That was how long it took to get to Jerusalem. He had found a ship on the Red Sea that had taken him to Lower Egypt. He had seen the pyramids and the ancient Egyptian temples on the way to the great city of Alexandria on the coast. There he had connected with the large Jewish community in that city, studying for a while in their synagogue and learning a great deal about their understanding of the tradition. But he still felt as if he had to go on to Jerusalem. And so he took a ship and sailed to Gaza, where he hired a chariot to drive to the city. The temple at Jerusalem, even after the incredible wonders he had seen in Egypt, was a marvel. The courtyard of the Gentiles was filled with people, not only with locals and with Jews who had been dispersed all over the known world, but also with many Gentiles who had come to see this famous place and to observe the strange Jewish rituals. But Bacchus was not here just to observe. He wanted to connect to his own heritage. And so he headed across the courtyard to the gate that led to the court of the people of Israel. It was also known as the women's court, because there was another court further in that was reserved for Israelite men. The gates to each court would be a test. There were temple guards at the gate, and as he approached, they looked him up and down with clear skepticism. He could understand why, though it did feel vaguely insulting to him. His skin was much darker than that of almost anyone he could see beyond the gate. His facial features looked different, and his black hair was thicker and curlier. It was like he could hear what they were thinking. He certainly didn't seem to belong here. But when he was asked, he could provide the names of his Jewish ancestors back almost a dozen generations. They let him through with a few sideways glances. The next gate was a bit more complicated. As he approached, he could tell that the low-level priests and the scribes standing around the door were examining him very carefully. They saw, in the shape of his face and his body, the telltale signs of someone who had been mutilated in childhood. As he drew near, one of them stepped forward to block his path with a sneer. "Sorry, friend, but this court is restricted only to the men of Israel. I do not believe that your kind is allowed." And that immediately started something. When Jews have the leisure to study and discuss the Torah, they love nothing more than to argue and disagree with one another. And so the whole area around the gate almost immediately erupted into a great shouting match. On one side were those who agreed with the man who had barred the door. "The law is quite clear," one cried. "Does it not say in the fifth book of Moses, no one who's, well, that no one like him shall come into the assembly of Adonai?" But others quickly came forward to argue. "Ah, but does not the prophet Isaiah say,
Do not let the eunuch say, I am just a dry tree. For thus says the Lord, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbath, who choose the things that please me and hold fast to my covenant, I will give in my house and within my walls a monument and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. Bacchus really just wanted to go into the courtyard, to be in the place where the God of Israel was said to meet with his people. He was looking to experience God. But instead, he had suddenly become a thing for people to fight over. None of them seemed to care about him. They just cared about being right. Even those who were arguing for him to be given access only seemed to be speaking of him as if he were an inanimate object, and a flawed one at that. And we often do that, don't we? We often value being right more than we value the people who cross our paths. Such an attitude is damaging both to us and to the people we encounter. Bacchus was turned off. Somehow, this was not quite what he had been looking forward to. He quietly slipped away, while the learned scholars continued to argue over him, not even realizing that he was gone. But there was one thing that remained with him from that encounter at the gate. The words that one of the scholars had shouted, the words that he said were spoken by the prophet Isaiah. They remained with him. In fact, he couldn't quite get them out of his head. He hadn't completely understood what the man had said. He did not speak the local Aramaic very well. The language of the small Jewish community in Ethiopia was quite different. But he had certainly picked up the idea that, according to this prophet, there really was a place for eunuchs, at least in the heart of God, if not in the court of the congregation of Israel. The court of the Gentiles was surrounded by a covered walkway lined with pillars. Various shops were set up along this walkway for the sale of sacrificial animals, incense, and various other things. There was a small booth that contained a few scrolls of the scriptures. The scroll of Isaiah was prominently displayed among them. It was obviously a popular work. It would have been painstakingly copied out by hand by some slave. When Bacchus's eye caught sight of it as he walked past, he suddenly realized that this was the reason why he had been drawn to this place. It was not to perform a sacrifice in the court of the Israelites. He had been brought here to be connected with this book. When he asked the price of the scroll, he winced at the answer. With that kind of money, he could probably buy a second house for himself back in Ethiopia. But of course, what need did he have for a second house? He didn't even have anyone to pass his one residence on to when he was gone. The Candace had been incredibly generous to him over the years. But none of it meant much of anything to him. And so he arranged for his chariot driver, a very large man that no one would ever dream of robbing, to come by later with enough gold coins to purchase the scroll. And now, as that driver steered the horses down the desert road, Bacchus had the scroll spread out on his knees while he strained to read the Hebrew script. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. It was not easy reading, trying to make out the strange characters syllable by syllable while the chariot bounced along beneath him. But he was grateful to be forced to read so slowly. It was making him think and ask so many questions. By a perversion of justice, he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living. He was struck by the words. They reminded him of his own personal journey, of the fear that he had felt when his parents had taken him for the operation. He had tried not to think of the unfairness of it all, the injustice of what he had been put through as little more than a child. And though he hated to think of it, there was a sense in which he had indeed felt cut off from the land of the living ever since. Now, Bacchus had never felt as if anyone could understand his deepest feelings. Never. Until now. But now, his mind was left reeling. About whom? He asked himself. Does the prophet say this? Is he talking about himself? Is he talking about me? Or is there someone else who can understand what I've been through? He needed to know. But he had no one to ask. That was when he heard the voice of someone who had seemingly come out of nowhere in this desert place. Do you understand what you are reading? The stranger wanted to know. We don't really know what the backstory is for the eunuch being on that road to Gaza. But if he had gone to Jerusalem to worship, either as a Gentile, which certainly happened, or as an expatriate Jew, he would have no doubt been treated as an outsider, both as an African and as a eunuch. Even if he was a Jew, most would have had trouble accepting him as a true Israelite, as a man, maybe even as a human being. And let's not pretend for a moment that we, as modern people, would be all that different. As is constantly shown in the world today, we continue to struggle with people who don't quite fit in, especially when it comes to matters of race and of diversity of gender expression. We don't really know what Philip said to him to make him feel like he did belong somewhere. We just know that he began with that passage in Isaiah and used it to tell him the good news about Jesus. Because that is the pattern throughout the book of Acts. Philip would have doubtlessly spoken to him about the death and resurrection of Jesus. And we can probably imagine how he connected that to the passage from Isaiah. But I suspect that whatever he told him about the good news, the thing that got his attention was that he told him that he could be loved and valued for who he was. That even if he fit in nowhere else, he had a place in the heart of Christ. Philip must have told him that he was loved and accepted for who he already was, because that is where all good news begins. That is it for this episode of Retelling the Bible. Please subscribe so you can get the next episode in a couple of weeks. And please rate and review the podcast wherever you can. The theme music for the podcast is Ah Da by Kevin MacLeod, and the mood music for this episode was Yesteryear's Decision by Sasha End. The music is licensed under the Creative Commons and can be found at incompetech.com and at filmmusic.io, respectively. Sound effects by Zapsplat. You can contact me on twitter.com at Retelling Bible and on the Facebook page Retelling the Bible. Show notes for this episode have been posted at retellingthebible.wordpress.com. Thanks once again to my awesome Patreon supporters whose support means so much to me. Go to patreon.com/retellingthebible to support this podcast. This is Retelling the Bible, and I have been your storyteller, W. Scott McCandless.